Year of the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 37. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Brian Solis. Brian is a principal analyst at Altimeter Group, a profit company. He's also an award-winning author, prominent blogger, writer, and keynote speaker. Brian is a digital analyst, anthropologist, and futurist, studying and influencing the effects of emerging technology on business, marketing, and culture. His research and his books help executives, and also everyday people, better understand the relationship between the evolution of technology and its impact on business and society, and also the role we play in it. As a result of his work, Brian also helps leading brands, celebrities, and startups develop new digital transformation, culture 2.0, and innovation strategies that enable businesses to adapt to new connected markets from the inside out. We welcome Brian to the show.
Brian Solis, welcome to Year of the Peer. I can't tell you how thrilled I am really to have you on the program. As you know, I enjoyed working with you so much during the years that you were doing some really terrific keynote presentations for Vistage. And I know, you know, since that time, you've got a great book which speaks to the customer experience, which I want to talk a little bit about because I think in terms of this show, our customer experience isn't just an individual experience, it's a shared one. So I'd really like to talk a lot about the dynamics of that. But I think first, I'd love for our audience to get a sense of what you're doing right now and just kind of update us on, you know, what you've been doing this coming year and what you're thinking about. What are your plans for next year?
Well, first, let me say, Leo, it's wonderful to see your mug. It's been a long time. I did have a lot of fun when we worked together on Vistage. To be honest, I don't even know where to start. It's been such a crazy last decade in that, you know, I started by studying disruptive technologies and really trying to understand the startup ecosystem and advise a lot of startups along the way. And then suddenly I started to watch its impact on business and traditional markets and really tried to help big businesses try to sort of survive what I was calling digital Darwinism. And then before we knew it, there was just too many disruptive technologies to track. The impact was so great. So I kind of hit pause and reassessed where I needed to be. And at that point, about maybe 10 years ago, became a digital anthropologist and really started looking at how technology was changing behaviors. So customers, employees, and then reverse engineering that back to what businesses need to think about in terms of perspective, mindsets, business model innovation, and then we can start talking about technologies. But once we understood, you know, basically getting a sense of purpose as to what was happening and why, that's where my work was. And then your question about the future, wow, I might need a glass of wine, really wax poetic on this one. But I think I'm going through my own transformation of sorts in that I've always tried to be that person that figured out everything. And I really found myself talking, I want to say like a human being, but of course as a human being, but trying to humanize a lot of these complex changes. And somewhere along the way, I realized that no matter how many reports I publish or how many books I publish, things aren't changing fast enough. And I want to have an impact on that. And so I might take a break, at least on the book side of things, to explore what are the personal dynamics of what sparks innovative and creative thinking in ways that are approachable by anybody? Because I think this is that time where it's not an elite opportunity, you know, in terms of innovation or disruption. It's not just for the people getting, you know, $20, $30, $100 million funding. I think right now businesses face such a disruptive time of all sizes, whether they're employers or whether they're selling. There's so much disruption on the horizon, and there's not enough change, and there's not enough personal accountability for taking change in their own hands. And so I think I want to see if I can have any kind of impact on that.
So tell me a little bit about that, because that's interesting. You know, of course, I see you making a distinction between disruption and change. But when you talk about things aren't changing fast enough, that's not something I typically hear, you know, from a lot of people who believe that things are changing for them very quickly. So talk to me about the kinds of things that aren't changing quickly enough as you see it.
I just give you an example. I was talking to a major CPG brand. They were on stage with me as part of this private discussion on internal innovation and transformation. They're lauded as one of the leading examples of CPG brands leading the way for other companies in toward the future. And later that evening, over drinks with someone who's leading digital transformation at a major beauty brand, she told me that she had the most interesting day, that she had been approached by a CPG brand to lead their digital transformation efforts and was put in touch with this particular brand's recruiter and HR team, of which was the brand I had been working with earlier that day. She said, "You're not going to believe it, but they want me to lead their digital transformation efforts, but the entire process was analog. I had forms, I had these questions being asked by people who had no idea what the questions meant." And she said it gave her like this, it just scared her away from what was she going to get into. She just knew she wasn't going to have an opportunity to really come there and lead digital transformation the way that at least she defined it or had hoped to. And so you just see this disconnect within all organizations. They know they need to change. They know they need to innovate. But you still have this regime of leadership and management that sees things the old way, that are still beholden to shareholders and stakeholders, that not that it's a bad thing, but they make decisions based on their experiences that were rooted in the past. And this is sort of that time where we have to rethink everything, not just the future of customer experience, but employee experience. Same thing that's happening to customers are happening to employees. And you have this HR system that was designed in the 60s that no longer is functional or relevant to a new generation of tomorrow's leaders. And I think that I could keep going on this, but there's just a lot that has to change in terms of process, policy, perspective, mindset, and less psychology in all of this, in that a lot of management today, a lot of executives subconsciously are applying cognitive bias to how they see the future. They're judging it. They're protecting what they know. There's a lot of people within the organization that sabotage this stuff. There's egos who don't want to acknowledge that they have things to learn. There's fear, there's self-doubt. So many of these things that at least that's where I hope I can help. If I can at least empower people on one side to say, look, we need change at every level. We need heroes at every level. And on the other side, hey, you're leading HR. Hey, you're leading sales. Hey, you're leading marketing. We've got to think about this much differently, because this isn't just about your company. This is about your job. This is about your career. This is about what you know and what you don't know, and taking responsibility for what you want to be in the future and not waiting for the present to take you down. This is a choice I think we all have. And unfortunately, it's difficult because we all came up learning things a certain way and doing things a certain way. But I think we all have this opportunity and necessity to do things differently moving forward.
So it's interesting you say that. You know, several weeks ago, you may or may not be aware that we had Claude Silver for VaynerMedia on the show. Of course, as you may know, she's the number two person in that company. She's the chief heart officer. And the way they think about HR, the way they think about their people, the way they drive and grow their organization, you know, is thinking differently and works. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you look at the growth that they've experienced. Do you think it's just easier for a company starting out to, you know, begin at its core with that kind of thinking versus a company that's been around a long time that really has to go through the kind of change that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that when we talk about change, it really is tied to the culture of the organization. Every company is going to be different in how it sees the problem and addresses the problem. And also, it, you know, to what extent and how quickly or slowly. I respect any company that's doing new things in new ways and finding success. I think that there's a lot that we could learn from studying those case studies. At the same time, I think that because each culture is unique, the DNA of a culture is unique, I think that most of the times if you talk to executives or even HR, sadly to say, and you ask them, what do you think the culture is here? You're going to get 1,000 different answers, if any. And then you're going to talk to employees and ask them the same question, and you're going to get 1,000 different answers, and none of them are going to overlap. None of them are going to be in alignment. And I study this every single year. I call it the engagement gap. I also just studied innovation cultures, and it's consistent. Executives running management, whether the C-suite or HR, or just some division of the organization, they consistently think that they are further along or on target versus their employees. And that's a dangerous gap to have. Same is true, by the way, for customer experience. If you ask customers if the companies that they do business with are in alignment with the brand promise, for example, they're not. This is where the challenge starts. Culture is the number one catalyst or the number one inhibitor for any kind of change. And unfortunately, most cultures are ethereal. They're not even a mandate. They're just sort of a function of how companies work. Yet we have to proactively look at not just people, but what's our purpose? It's 2017, it's gonna be 2018. What we see are a whole new breed of human beings who have who think differently, they behave differently, they have different preferences, expectations. As a result, their value systems are changing. And we still are building businesses or selling products or benefits against these old definitions of how we define value. So I hate to keep going, but one last thing, and this is where I think it's super important, is that I think we have to start by first recognizing where the market is and where it's going, right? And how things are changing. And then assess our own capabilities within. Do we have the expertise? Are we structured the right way? What does our workforce even look like? And then what are we missing? What's broken? And all these audits reveal all kinds of crazy gaps and crazy priorities, of which then give us specific direction rather than just looking at case studies of other companies, but give us specific directions on how we're going to solve this, starting with a conversation of, Leo, what do you think the culture of our organization is based on all of this information, and what should it be moving forward? What's that purpose going to be so that people can assign to that purpose and feel like their work every single day is measuring or impacting towards that purpose? So long answer, but I'm super passionate about it.
Well, you know, one example that I'll throw in your direction here is kind of fun. So a number of years ago, I talked to a chief human resources officer, and at the time, this CHRO was bragging about, based on an employee survey they had done, how much the, you know, rank and file employees, if you will, trusted the senior leadership team and the CEO. And I asked him, have you ever asked the question in reverse? Have you ever asked the employees whether you believe that the CEO trusts you? And he says, no, I never really asked that question before. And I think they asked it the next year, and I'm not sure they got nearly the answer they had hoped for, because these employees were feeling incredibly micromanaged. They didn't feel trusted at all. They didn't feel empowered. It was locking up the organization on so many different fronts. And I think in many respects, when you talk about audits and trying to find out certain things, we're not always asking the right questions, you know, either. And I think that, you know, it's pretty essential that we start getting to the heart of, you know, to your point, the priorities and, you know, values of the of employees today, and how to unlock that and how to make that work for your organization. Obviously, I think it's really essential, you know, but, you know, one of the things you'd mentioned, I want to pivot just a little bit, because you talked a lot about the changes that you've gone through over the last 10 years. And certainly a lot of that has been, you know, what's going on in the environment and the market and all. But I'd love to get a sense too, because I think we all have certain people and certain influences in our lives who are really important to us. And I'm wondering if there are any individuals that you might, want to talk about who you believe have made a difference in some of your attitudes and ideas and pivots that you've made over the last decade or so.
I'm always the worst with questions like this. Also, just to forewarn you, what companies do you think are doing this right? I'm going to fail that one too. And the reason is that I don't. By the way, the other questions I'll fail is, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite movie? What's your favorite band? I don't know if I'm weird in that way. It's just that I have. I don't know. Everybody, I guess, is the answer. There's so many. My brain is always focused in a million different directions, and I always find inspiration for whatever I need to move in these different things. I'm not finding anyone voice who's just kind of doing everything for me. But like, for example, when I was writing X, The Experience Meets Design, I thought it was ironic that I was writing a book about the future of digital customer experiences in a book. So I thought, well, hey, I'm going to challenge readers to think differently about creating these unique native experiences for people. Well, why couldn't I do the same thing for paper? And why couldn't I study how people were changing and how they read based on these devices and how they interact with their favorite apps, and really learned a lot about user experience and user interface design. And so in that regard, Jesse James Garrett really inspired me. He was one of the co-founders of Adaptive Path. And when I started thinking about then taking these design, what I thought was design innovation, and applying it to paper and reconstructing the concept of a book and a story arc and a table of contents and flow, then I really started looking at Walt Disney and the work that he did in the 1930s around storyboards. And I had a gentleman by the name of Nick Sung, who was a storyboard artist for Pixar, come and spend a lot of time with me to teach me the art of storyboarding. So I get that type of inspiration around specific movements that I have. And one of those right now, for example, is the founders of IDEO, as I think differently about how I'm going to approach my own personal pivot and see if I couldn't conquer some type of, I don't want to say personal transformation book, but maybe a prelude to innovation, is how to make innovation approachable by everybody. So in that regard, IDEO has been huge for me. And then I just love looking at artistry. Ralph Steadman, who was the illustrator for a lot of Hunter S. Thompson's work, and even Hunter S. Thompson himself, and trying to challenge convention and think differently. I think it would be natural to look at Steve Jobs in that regard, but I'm, looking at the Renegades and the Rebels and seeing what I could learn from them as a way of empowering myself to validating, I guess, what I think, and then finding ways to communicate back in an inspiring way. That so Maya Angelou right now is helping me take these really crazy complex sources of innovation and change and humanizing them in ways that are inspirational and not meaningless platitudes that so many self-help authors end up delivering, which they connect with a lot of people. But I think at the end of the day, if anyone is going to read my work, they want to know, what am I going to do next? Don't just make me feel good. Tell me exactly what to do, because you're asking me to change 50, 60, 70 year old business models, and that's not going to be easy.
So first of all, I don't think you failed at answering that question at all. So, secondly, it was maybe one of the better answers I've ever received on that question. So I really appreciate that. And by the way, speaking to the book, it's probably really one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen. It is really, really well done and well designed. And all I thought of was how involved and the work it took, to put that together. But with that too, one of the real questions, as I mentioned, at the outset, was I would love to talk about this idea of the customer experience, not simply as an individual experience, but as a shared experience. And I would imagine that customer experience you also get firsthand whenever you're in front of an audience, because while you were speaking to individuals, there's a whole group dynamic going on there that I think really feeds on itself in a great way. And I'd love you to just share a little bit about some of your experiences there.
The word experience is what inspired that book, what inspired the design, just the topic, the everything. And the reason why is because I found out that the word experience turns out to mean a lot of different things. We all talk about experience, but again, you know, I do this with everything, whether it's innovation, customer experience, anything that I tackle, I have to really get to the root definition of that word. Sure. So that I can build upon it with, because I know that when you put yourself out there, you risk people trying to take you down or debate you. And you know, I don't want to expose myself in a way that if it's something that I just could have easily found by doing some research. But it turns out that something so simple as just trying to get to the core of something and finding its true meaning and its belief and or why you believe that it's so important, it turns out to be really inspiring. So the word experience, and again, I promise I'll come back to customer experience.
No.
Is it turns out that when we talk about it in a business context, we're sort of missing the real element of what it is. And even trying to find, even looking at all the dictionaries and finding a definition that everybody could agree on was a challenge. And so I thought I would just kind of strip it down to this essence of an experience is what someone can feel or what someone can sense in a moment. And you can sort of measure that experience immediately and over the long term and how they react and how they feel. And I felt that a lot of times businesses were leaving those moments to chance, in that I don't know how you feel. I might ask you a net promoter score question, like, would you refer us? But that doesn't really get me to how you feel about anything and in what moment. And so I felt that if we could agree that an experience would be some type of emotional moment, some type of emotional reaction, then the customer experience would have to be possessive, in that the customer's experience is the experience, and that it was the sum of all engagements a customer had with your brand in each moment, and all of those moments combined. That could only be the customer's experience, and therefore the baseline for customer experience. And I realized that that definition and that approach to the topic was completely backwards from how most businesses look at it. They look at it systematically, functionally, tactically. We look at customer journeys. We look at where we can make improvements. We have to maybe create mobile apps, you know, optimize websites for mobile screens. So they think about it from inward to the outside. Whereas what I'm asking you to do is take an outside-in approach to reverse engineer the customer experience based on what they value, what they love, what they don't love, what they don't know to love yet. So for example, if you're Virgin America, you know, you're probably looking at Uber, you're probably looking at Tinder, you're probably looking at the iPhone, Android phones, you're probably looking at the things that consumers love who happen to also probably fly, and trying to find these elements of the experiences people love and reverse engineer that into your brand, your value proposition, and then play it out. How would they want to go through that customer experience? And realize that there's things to fix, and then there's also things that you're not even doing or addressing today, and also probably don't have the expertise or the thinking inside the organization to do that. So when I talk about customer experience, I want to engage people in an emotional way, regardless of what the industry is, so that the customer's empowered or the customer's happy or the customer's whatever they're setting out to do and how they define value. And I put myself through that whole ordeal when I wrote X. I realized that there were opportunities to deliver an experience to the reader that typically I would have done as a normal business, which was write a book and try to be as smart as I could and as helpful as I could and just follow a 100-something-year-old process with the publisher I was working with, or look at how the consumer is changing and see if I couldn't innovate and find ways to deliver a better experience. So that's how I approach it. It's not the most popular approach, because I'm asking people to essentially challenge their own conventions and find ways to disrupt themselves. But I think ultimately, if we don't disrupt ourselves, it will be a gift given to us by someone else.
Well, I think it's obviously really important. Anytime you're going to take a word like experience, which can be very loaded for people, you know, you've got the denotation of the word, the connotation of the word, and what it means to you know, all kinds of people. And whenever you don't define that word, you're always at risk for people, you know, going off the rails in terms of not always understanding where you're coming from and what that's all about. So I think taking the time to do that is obviously, you know, essential. But I also, I think, see that the experience with the brand as an individual is also part of that experience, can be a collective experience as well, in terms of what that starts to become when they were surrounded by other customers and how they may react to the product or how they might self-identify or whatever. And I guess I'm wondering, how much of that did you look at in terms of how the collective drives the customer experience?
It's a good word, the collective. You know, I as I was writing the book, I realized there was, it's a little known secret, but X is actually part two to a book called What's the Future of Business, or AKA WTF.
Right.
And I started writing X first, and I went backwards, stopped writing X and wrote WTF, because I realized we can't talk about experience design and experience architecture if we can't talk about what the experience, the individual experience is, and also what the collective experience is. And so in that book, I came up with what I called the ultimate moment of truth, which played off of, you know, ZMOD, FMOD, SMOD. And the ultimate moment of truth was the moment your customer or employee has that experience and they share it. Because we live in an economy now where an experience, if it's not shared online in some way, shape, or form, then it didn't happen. And that led me to say that welcome to a new era of business of which your brand is defined by the people who experience it. And so to your point, the collective is more important than ever before. In fact, I've spent the last, oh my goodness, maybe two and a half years now doing hands-on research with Google around what they call micro moments. And we've been able to show in every single industry, including B2B, how shared experiences absolutely help someone make a decision about what steps they take moving forward before they ever engage a brand or a brand website or content. And it's huge. It's so disruptive. And that's why we're doing all of this research, is trying to rattle the cages of everybody to say, wow, you know, your customers are learning how to bypass you because they're relying on the collective experiences of the people that they feel that they can trust, and they don't trust brands.
Mm. Wow. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I know that you've got an incredibly busy schedule. You've been incredibly generous to kind of squeeze in time today to do that. And I'll tell you this, I know that in terms of the listener experience, you really helped us deliver something that I think is going to have some real value for folks today. So again, I can't tell you how appreciative I am that you joined us. And I will we'll stay in touch, of course, continue to follow your work. And, you know, I've got a book coming out next year, so hopefully you'll enjoy having a look at that. And we'll go from there.
You know, Leo, I've always considered you a good friend, and I always admire and respect the way you think. And I'm, of course, am here to help you in any way, shape, or form. So I look forward to the release of your book. By the way, I liked your last book, too. It was really, really cool. And so let's change the world together, my man.
There you go. All right. Thank you, sir. We'll talk later.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobottari.com. That's LEOBOTTARY.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell. Hosted, of course, by Leo Bottari. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod, Vibe Ace. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.